Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Adriana Gascoigne, who is the founder and CEO of Girls in Tech, a global nonprofit dedicated to empowering, educating, and mentoring women in the technology industry. But also, she is author of a new book called Tech Boss Lady, How to Start Up, Disrupt, and Thrive as a Female Founder. Hi, Adriana, and welcome.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So, Adriana, for the benefit of our listeners and readers and things, I mean, can you just give us a quick thumbnail? Tell us a bit about yourself. Give us a quick thumbnail sketch about you and also about the work that you do, just to kind of give us a picture.
Great. Happy to. So my background is in actually consumer brand marketing. Mm-hmm. So I started my career back in the day in working in a large advertising firm, JWT, Hill & Knowlton, and Manning, Salvage & Lee, to name a few.
Right.
And I was really impressed with the way that these marketing campaigns could really influence people's actions. And my background in sociology, I thought that that major wasn't going to lead to much, but it actually did help me create a better understanding of why I cared so much about working with people and understanding behaviors and habits and, you know, cultural nuances and things like that, that really impacted people's purchase power or influenced them to make certain decisions when it came to consumer goods.
Right.
However, you know, at that point, I always knew that I wanted to give back and I wanted to pay it forward. I got into the Peace Corps at one point, and unfortunately there was a malaria outbreak, so I couldn't go to Nicaragua. But I've always given back in terms of, using my spare time. Like in high school, I was a candy striper working at a local hospital. In college, I worked at the Woodland Mentorship Program and, you know, helped mentor young kids that were underserved. And I've done that the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I've been a mentor with Year Up and Enterprise for high school students. And I just love it. It's part of my nature. It's part of who I am. And I feel so immensely blessed that I've been given such a great life and given such awesome opportunities specifically with education, that I wanted to build something I knew someday in the education space.
Right.
And I moved around the country a bit, Miami, New York, and even outside of the country, Singapore. I lived in London for a bit. And it wasn't until I came to San Francisco and sort of jumped into the tech industry did I sort of realize that there was a massive need for an organization like Girls in Tech, because I was the one female at a 30-person tech startup and would deal with the things that you hear in the papers or read in the papers. So
right.
Alienation, isolation, sexual harassment, you know, just you name it. I felt very uncomfortable, even though I did love the product and services that we were building and the whole startup culture as a whole, in terms of like being in a flat, non-hierarchical environment.
Right.
I really loved that aspect of it. But I knew we needed to hire more women and people of diverse backgrounds. So I set out to launch Girls in Tech in San Francisco, February of 2007. And I knew I was onto something when 200 women walked through those doors that evening. And it was just so inspirational hearing the conversations and how they engaged with one another, shared ideas. And I'm like, I'm onto something. I have to do something with this platform. And I did it sort of pro bono. I had a job at a startup or even a mid-stage tech company throughout the time that I started Girls in Tech. So it was all funded with my own capital for the first several years. And then in 2015, when I started really focusing on raising funds, was I able to then get a salary and then bring on a team of people who are salaried, which now make up our headquarters. And we have 6 employees at our headquarters in San Francisco, and we work with a variety of consultants. But because we were really, really focused on, you know, creating this foundation where we could easily scale, you know, we're now, you know, 12 plus years after the launch, we're now in 47 cities in 33 countries and have over 62,000 members over 6 continents. So it is really, I'm really proud of it. It's really exciting to see how much we've expanded. But more importantly, see the impact we're making for our members and their careers around the world.
Perfect. Now, thank you for that. And congratulations on the success for, so far. And kind of like, I wish you tons more, because incredible initiative. And I shouldn't call it initiative, but maybe it's initiative now, right now, but it's like I wish it wasn't, if you know what I mean. And it's things we didn't need to sort of like have this kind of conversation, but we do, and you do some great work in it, and that's fantastic. But also on the top of that, you found time to write this book called Tech Boss Lady: How to Start Up, Disrupt and Thrive as a Female Founder. I mean, why did you write the book? I mean, is it your first book? You know, why did you write it? Kind of, what's its main thesis? What are the main lessons kind of from it?
I always wanted to write a book, and this is something that was able to check that box, so to speak. I was really sick and tired of just reading startup books and manuals and listening to podcasts where only men were being interviewed, male founders of startups. And sharing their success stories and trials and tribulations and best practices. And I said, there are so many awesome women out there that are launching their own startups, creating their own companies, building products and services that are very innovative and very important for society today, not only for the general population, but for women in particular, because we are experiencing these things. And so we're solving problems for our gender.
Sure.
And so I wanted to give them a megaphone and share their story. We interviewed over 45 women, only captured, I believe it was 22 women's stories within the book. Mm-hmm. But I was very passionate about that. And then sort of tying in my personal story, because I was very influenced by my family, who both my mom and my dad were entrepreneurs, and my mom is an immigrant. So the immigrant story really ties in really sort of seamlessly with being a entrepreneur, because a lot of the traits of an immigrant, being strappy, bootstrappy, resourceful, not knowing the word no, those types of things that really rings true to entrepreneurs as well. You need that resiliency to exist in order to succeed in the startup sector.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to tie in my personal story. And I've worked at 12 different startups in my lifetime and started a company in Singapore, started Girls in Tech, which is our social enterprise. And I wanted to share those trials and tribulations because it's not easy.
No.
You know, I didn't say that sentence in the book, this shit is hard, because that should never be sugarcoated. It shouldn't be nice and sweet and have a bow. I think the startup life is like over glamorized. Mm. People really know what they're getting into. And I wanted to share that because, I ended up falling into doing Girls in Tech full time, not because I really was ready or I didn't think I was ready, because I had to. And that's a chapter in the book, but I had to. I was put in a situation where I owed $95,000. I was extremely stressed out that it really started affecting my health, and I was under the gun. So, things like that happen. Right. And so I wanted to keep it real in this book, make it really raw, gritty, share these personal stories, also stories from women I respect. Mm. And at the end of every chapter, there's a reference guide. So basically, it's a snapshot or a summary of what was discussed in the chapter. And then basically, a to-do list of things that you have to think about or do in every stage of building your startup.
I mean, I really like it because it feels very personal. But it also is like the book is a warts and all account. There's some hard talk, there's a little bit of profanity in there, but it's all about what it's like to be a woman in the tech industry. And it's particularly honest or in that sort of sense of being, it's full of anxiety, feelings of inadequacy and misogyny. I mean, I don't want to spoil the book. Obviously, you want people to go and buy the book and learn from it themselves. But what would you say some of the two or three big things that you've learned in your journey that you think would be great advice for aspirant or actual tech boss ladies?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of advice that I would give. The one piece of advice that, you know, just rings true throughout all the startups I've worked at and, you know, in my personal entrepreneurial endeavors is take that risk.
Right.
You know, take the bull by the horns, you know, put all your chips in. If you don't put all your chips in at some point or another, you're not going to be able to realize the impact that you can make to build that startup. So you really need to take that risk, you know, even if you're fearful. We're all fearful at one point or another. But that adds to the excitement of the experience. And I really think that that fuels the adrenaline that can help the startup grow. Mm-hmm. And you have more skin in the game. You know, there's right. more on the line. You know, obviously, you have to make sure that you can pay your bills and pay rent and all of that. But I really do feel that, you know, being able to take that risk is so crucial, so important. And it really is the difference between what Girls in Tech was before when I was doing it part-time pro bono to now where I'm doing it full-time with a salary. Night and day difference, night and day. So, yeah.
So, I mean, because that's really interesting because, you know, you kind of read what we read and see all these different sort of things. I mean, and you've done it yourself. It was almost a bit like Girls in Tech started off as a bit of a, what some people would call a side hustle or a 5-to-9er. Or whatever it might, other sort of like names people can give for their, you know, little initiatives on the side. But do you think there was a really visceral sort of effect around being going when you kind of commit to something? I mean, does your commitment go up? Does the productivity go up? Does your endeavor go up? Your insightfulness, your level of activity? I mean, have you seen that difference?
Yeah, no, I've seen that difference. And, you know, I have an innate sense of urgency. And the one thing that I hated doing, you know, raising funds, mm-hmm. and asking people for money is the one thing that I've had to really get good at. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've had to learn that. I've had to build a network. I've had to really be able to sell and package the organization in a way that is, that resonates with companies so that they will support the organization. It's not as easy as like help a group of women around the world get an education. Mm. Sadly, it's about, well, what's in it for me as well? Like sure. Companies have to, you know, track their ROI. And, you know, so we've had to create packages for recruitment or how do we link CSR and PR, like corporate social responsibility, with the opportunity of creating awareness that your company is great. Look at, they're supporting an organization and diversity in the workforce. Mm. Or it could be thought leadership. Hey, our leadership wants to participate in some of your larger conferences. Let's get the word out there. They want to show that they are committed to the cause and that their company is actually the caring of the diversity and inclusion movement.
Sure.
So I think it's a long-winded way of addressing that, you know, that these things were not in my wheelhouse. They were not in my toolkit.
Yeah.
And I really had to push hard to figure out how to tackle this fundraising situation or else I wouldn't exist, you know, sure. Or else we can't have a roof over our heads.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I wanted to invite you onto the podcast, not just because you've written a book, because I think the book's great, But it's because we met at the recent PegaWorld event in Las Vegas, where and Pega has helped with some of the fundraising, I believe. And you talked about that. But actually, you were on the main stage at PegaWorld, and you were talking about the work that you do, and also you highlighted this discrepancy in the U.S. workforce, where you said that while there are 47% of workers in the U.S. workforce are women, only 25% of U.S. IT and tech workers are women. I mean, that's a huge, huge sort of gap. I mean, is it the same around the rest of the world, or is it worse, or is it better? I mean, what's your experience telling you? Because the thing to me is that you know, technology, and particularly in my space, sort of service and experience, technology is almost like dominating the conversation right now. And it seems to me that discrepancy between that male-female gender imbalance has to be having an impact.
Yeah, so it is an issue all around the world in varying degrees. I think actually US is better, surprisingly.
Right.
I think, for example, Australia is 10%, so it's 15% less.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of other statistics from other countries, but definitely willing to share after this call. But, you know, I think that we're making progress.
Okay.
Now, I think that unfortunately the statistics that we see for actual colleges and people graduating or women graduating with computer science degrees has decreased. And I think that's just the nature of, you know, the influence that women are getting at an early age.
Right.
But I do feel that more women are entering into the tech workforce and applying for those jobs. And, you know, looking at things like data science as an career opportunity, or product marketing or product design, you know, really dabbling in the startup sector. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of lateral moves, like designers that are interested in becoming developers and right. that are taking courses outside of college, you know, taking Girls in Tech Code G course, which we teach Python coding, level 1, 2, and 3. And just being more proactive about their destiny, and you know, wanting to be the best that they can be in their career, sort of being in sort of curiosity mode or discovery mode, and taking the bull by the horns, which is very, very exciting for me.
Yes,
but I do see a massive difference in that regard, applications from women across the board, and that's both high tech companies and startups and IT divisions within other corporations. And also in terms of people actually having that upward mobility.
Right.
And sticking through their experience and people talking about it. So companies holding themselves accountable, HR departments holding themselves accountable, employees holding themselves accountable based on their actions and words and how that makes others feel.
Yeah.
I think that's also like a widespread thing now, especially in more developed countries around the world. And I think that is so, so important, because it's not just about, you know, hiring a diversity and inclusion executive and hoping that things change. It's a cultural systematic issue that needs to change. So it's education, it's creating awareness, it's holding people accountable, and seeing these awesome role models and leaders that are drinking the Kool-Aid, like the CEO of Danone. He like incorporated the he for she movement within Danone,
right?
And now sort of living that and breathing that and talking about it and taking action with policies and training programs and opportunities for flexible work environments, et cetera.
Yeah.
The Mark Benioff, another example of somebody who listened to his employees, his female employees, and said, hey, we're not getting paid the same as our male counterparts. So he says, okay, we're going to do the research, and then we're going to make sure everyone in the company is getting paid the same for doing the same job.
Yeah.
So he did that, right? He
invested
in time to ensure that compensation parity was of utmost importance at Salesforce, which happens to be the number one employer in Silicon Valley.
Perfect.
So,
I think it's great. I mean, I think the those are fantastic examples, and like you said, that the numbers are and many countries are definitely moving in the right direction, and there are companies and nonprofits and movements like and initiatives like yourselves that are addressing that and raising awareness, and companies are starting to move. I guess I'm, for me personally, and I'm sure you're the same, is like, I'd like things to go a bit faster because there is this empathy sort of deficit, you know, I think that we're facing, not in only in tech, but all business overall. And because I think about these things from a customer service and customer experience perspective, I sometimes wonder how, if we think about it from that perspective, we could possibly inject a bit more urgency into this, because businesses will see that it's a good thing to do, just a good thing to do and the right thing to do. It has to be almost like an imperative in many ways, because it's the best thing for everybody, you know, including their business, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think how do you think that gender imbalance, I mean, do you have a view on how maybe gender imbalance impacts a company's ability to connect and serve their customers?
Yeah, I do. I think any kind of imbalance does, right? And I always have said that, you know, based on my experiences working at 12 different startups, but what I've seen and heard from all different startup employees and executives and leaders within the field, if you have a diverse group of people, you know, supporting the development of your products and services, then you're going to be better creative problem solvers. Mm-hmm. You're going to innovate at a faster pace and have more sort of strategic product features added to your products or services. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to have a culture where people are productive and feel safe, and it's a fruitful environment where it is all about camaraderie and helping one another achieve greater levels of success. But really, I would say the creative problem solving and finding solutions on the fly, everyone has different perspectives based on their own personal experiences. And you won't get those different perspectives if you're hiring the same type of person for that role.
Sure.
If the company is filled with 25 to 30 year old white men, male engineers, then they're building products and services for their friends, essentially.
Sure.
And so bringing in different types of people will bring in different perspectives and then allow for a more comprehensive product that is good for everyone, that everyone who uses it. Right. Not just a very limited group of people. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. So if I was to say to you, my blog and my podcast focuses on people that are not just in tech, but in service and experience, and they're always looking for tips and hints and tips about how to improve their service or experience, or how to kind of be more successful in their chosen, you know, careers and professions. You know, given your experience, what would be your best advice?
Yeah, so from a company's perspective, I think accountability is extremely important. And actions speak louder than words when it comes to that.
Yes.
So I would say when working with large corporations, things like, you know, really understanding the happiness of your employees and in some cases your customers, but I'm talking, you know, specifically about the employees and doing those e-surveys or doing using assessment tools like Culture Amp mm-hmm. to really understand, you know, areas of improvement, things that make the employees happy, areas where it's just, you know, devastating and you need to fix it right away. I think that those assessments are important. Mm-hmm. I also think that creating specific training and policies that can really help upper management, executives, and even employees in some cases know how to work better with each other.
Right.
And give a safe space for employees to come and alert the HR department or any executive about something that's happening in the company that's not right.
Yes.
You know, so that they feel supported by the company and they feel like action will be taken and that they won't be punished if they come forward. So that's really important too. Mm-hmm. And I do think that in terms of, you know, recruitment tactics, things need to change dramatically there. So whether it's rewriting job descriptions or, you know, having a more diversified panel of folks that are the interviewers, or figuring out different ways of testing the candidates before they come in, I think that's so, so, so crucial. Mm-hmm. And that is happening slowly, but I think it's really hard for older or larger corporations to incorporate new testing, you know, infrastructure, right, mm-hmm. and systems in place because they spent a lot of money doing it once. Like they don't want to adapt it or change it because it'll cost more money again. Yeah. But I think it is very, very worth it in these changing times with you know, talent being you know, more picky as they should be about where they work, because they not only want to have a great job with an awesome company that's very innovative, they want to make sure it's a culture that's conducive to safety and productivity, and, you know, they want to feel supported.
Yeah.
So I think from that perspective, I see those things as being really important for corporations. For customers, I think more than ever, customers are, you know, really care about companies who pay it forward, right?
And
they want to see those businesses being socially responsible. And it's not just in the ingredients they use if they're actually creating products, but it's more about like how they're giving back to the communities they serve, those who are underserved, who need more support and help and education. And, you know, doing it in a very authentic way, without any requirements for people to, you know, to pay money in order to get XYZ gift or whatever it is. It's just really out of the goodness of their hearts, because they feel like it is, it is an important facet of any business to really make those sacrifices and pay it forward. And I think in the end, it will impact their bottom line. And social organizations or B Corps, you know, you see the revenues increasing time, you know, year over year, because, you know, people really want to invest in people who care, right? Or organizations, sure, or companies who care. So I see that as a very positive customer service tactic that is really changing the landscape and, you know, holding people accountable to being socially responsible.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Adriana, I mean, first of all, I just wanted to, one, congratulate you on writing the book. I know it's a big personal kind of tick. I know what sort of effort it takes to produce one of those things. Mm-hmm. So well done on that. I absolutely want to congratulate you on the work that you're doing with Girls in Tech. I think it's a fantastic not-for-profit. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing. Before I ask you a couple of final kind of questions, which are a bit of social research for me, is there anything else that you'd like to add that we've missed out, that you'd like to point out?
I think that just something that we're really proud of is our recruitment platform launch. It's a software as a service that we just created over the last year, and it's in beta launch right now. So
right.
In the next few months, it will be launching live. And really, it's a way for us to connect corporates to our top-notch talent, which's in our network.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have interesting product features within the platform that include an aptitude test. So it's not mandatory to take the test, but corporations can actually tick the box to encourage people to take it. And that serves as a filtering mechanism before, you know, people approach the candidate. So, you know, we're doing things that we hope are differentiators, and, you know, we'll get people to subscribe to the platform.
Perfect. And where can we find the platform in beta right now?
Yeah, so it's recruitment.girlsintech.org.
Fantastic. Well, I will make sure we get all that linked up and give you all a big shout out for that when this goes kind of live. So my final thing is, because I, as I sort of alluded to, I've just published a new book and it's called Punk CX, which I was telling you about. And I've been doing a bit of social research with everybody I've been talking to on the podcast since the book went live. And the first thing I've been asking them is, like, what one or two words do they think would describe a punk approach to customer experience?
A punk approach to customer experience. So in how I define quote unquote punk, I think that coming from a product marketing hat, because that's my background, sure. I would say that, well, first off, storytelling is very important. Mm-hmm. So really capturing those stories from customers that are really meaningful and powerful, and, you know, understanding their experience in a very engaged way. So what do they like about the product? What do they not like about the product? How can we improve? You know, it's not only the product or services that one is offering, it's the customer relations. It's sure. How easy it is to find out information about how to solve certain issues that they're experiencing with the product or service, et cetera. But those stories, from a product marketing perspective, have been very important to organizations like Girls in Tech, because it shows that you care so much about how your product or service is impacting your members, in our case, that you want to share that story to the world and have them be that brand ambassador, if you will, to promote their experience, because they're so passionate about it. So being able to not only listen and understand where that customer is coming from, but also promote and, you know, amplify their voice so that they can really, really feel like the company really cares about them, and that their opinion matters, and that they are maybe with their guidance or their input or opinion, they are helping change the product for the better. Mm. So I think that that's really positive. But, you know, given that, you know, I am a product marketer and that's how I started my career, I look at it as more as how we're marketing the product and how we're really listening to the customers to adapt it and then promote our customers' experiences so that they feel ownership and they feel like they're a part of the company.
Perfect. That's great. Storytelling. I love it. Yeah. But then if I was to ask you to bring that to life and pick a company or a brand that you think epitomizes that sort of punk CX ethos that you've sort of described there, what sort of company or brand would you pick?
I would say Apple, you know, and, right. And you know, it's like, that's the most obvious one, but they use stories because they, their big campaign of, you know, promoting the photos from people's phones and, you know, yep. Capturing what's special to them and why they were inspired to take the photo and giving them that space to shine as a way to market their product. That's genius. You know, I think that it's very, very, it's promoting the quality of the product, but it's also promoting the fact that they really care about their users. They really care about their customers, and yeah. they want to engage with them in a way that celebrates the usage of the product.
Yeah, I think what's also interesting about Apple as an example is it also shows that you don't even the biggest companies can be punk. It's a punk isn't just a thing that's limited to like smaller startups or kind of new entrants or challenger brands or whatever. It's like actually even the biggest companies can be that way inclined. It's a choice. It becomes a choice about mindset, about how you approach things.
Exactly. Yep.
Adriana, what a great example to finish with. But once again, just wanted to say First of all, congratulations on the book. It was a delight to meet you in Las Vegas at PegaWorld, and I wish you every success with the great work that you're doing in Girls in Tech. And thank you for your time for sharing your time and your insight and your experience with us today. That's been great.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, and talk to you soon. Take care.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.